Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Reveal Your Excellence with the on-camera coach, Renee Ellison. I'm Renee Ellison and I'm so excited to be with you this morning. We have a fantastic show. I feel like I haven't been here in a while. The last time I was here, I was so sick. I could barely speak. And we had a great guest on the air that day and she did most of the talking, thank goodness. But I'm feeling much better today and we have another phenomenal guest on the air today. She is a former radio executive. She's been in the entertainment industry. She now writes full-time. Her name is Betsy Otter Thompson, and she wrote this incredible book called Love Human that we're going to be talking about today, and just examining what it means to find comfort in the discomfort. That's what our show is all about today. The great news is that Betsy is one of those incredibly professional people who was able to help me in the preparation of the show. The last several weeks, I started a full-time job, and it's been so crazy and so hectic and so busy. And Betsy was kind enough to kind of help me in the preparation of the show today. So I'm so excited to just be able to talk to her about the book and really find out what motivated her and inspired her to write it, and how we as her readers and her listeners can learn what it feels like to find comfort in the discomfort. I definitely need to know that, because sometimes life gets so busy and out of control, and we want to know what it means to kind of be able to slow down and really enjoy life on a daily basis. So Betsy's going to talk to us a little bit more about that today. Before we get started, I want to just promote a couple shows that are coming up in the next couple of days and weeks. Mark my words, with Certified Life and Business Coach Mark Shaw will be on tomorrow at 9 p.m. And then Save Your Sanity, Making Self-Care Work for You. I'm all about saving your sanity. That's going to be on Monday on the 16th at 9 p.m. And then on Wednesday the 25th, Think Tank is going to be on with Jan Jaffe. And that's how to recognize and navigate toxic relationships. I think we all need to learn a little bit about that, because sometimes relationships can drain us, make us very distracted from our goals and what it is that we want from life. So I hope you'll tune in to those shows in the next coming days. So without any further ado, let me introduce you to Betsy Otter Thompson. Betsy's work has always gravitated toward the media. She's a native Philadelphian with a BFA from the University of Pennsylvania. She has worked as an account executive for WFIL Radio in Philadelphia, a very popular station, and from there went on to radio stations WPEN and WFLN. After that, she became a commercial print model and acted in television commercials in New York and Philadelphia, and for 17 years, she worked in Los Angeles at the motion picture and television company Castle Rock Entertainment as the assistant to the chairman and CEO. She is now writing full-time, and her book, Love Human, is incredibly insightful and intuitive, and I just want to introduce you to the remarkable Renaissance woman, author, Betsy Otter Thompson. Good morning, Betsy.
Good morning, Renee. Thank you for such a beautiful introduction. That was very nice.
You're welcome. You're welcome, and well deserved. You know, I had an opportunity to read some parts of your book. I have to honestly admit, with my busy schedule, unless it's on tape, I'm not able to really appreciate it and enjoy it too much. But in my downtime, I was able to read parts of your book, and there are so many insightful, wise thoughts in your book, and I'm so looking forward to just kind of finding out what Love Human is all about.
Okay, but first, before I do anything, I want to say, I want to react to what you said in your introduction, because it has something to do with what's in my book. And it seems to me, I believe that the soul is always wise 24/7 in terms of what we need in our life. And you talked about how crazy busy you were, and then you got sick. And to me, that is like the soul saying, okay, if you won't slow down the way you need to willingly, we will slow you down nevertheless.
Yes. And boy, I'll tell you, it's amazing how that happens, right? And you fight it, and then all of a sudden you just can't fight it anymore because your body won't let you.
That's right. I mean, it's if we knew that, you know, how wise our soul was, it always had us, you know, always had us where we need to be for what we need to learn. And obviously at that point you needed to learn that it isn't about all that's happening on the outside of you, it's about what's happening on the inside of you.
Wow, that's good stuff, Betsy. So what is Love Human all about?
Well, it's about finding comfort in a world where uncomfortable things happen. And other than that, it's about embracing the world as it is and the people around us as they are and loving whatever that is. And not because it's a perfect world, which we know it isn't, but because as we love and accept life as it is, love and acceptance grow, which is what we are all hoping will happen in the world.
That's so true. And why did you write the book?
Well, I wrote the book. I have to go back a little ways when I talk about why these books have come into being, because it all started when I was around 4. And I knew that my mother was always talking about her grandmother, who was my great-grandmother, who had passed away a few days before I was born. And she said I looked a lot like this woman. And I, even at that age, believe it or not, I was having trouble getting along with my mother, so I thought the fact that I looked like somebody she loved was a definite asset. And so I started talking to this woman at night. I didn't tell anybody my plans to talk to her, so nobody told me I couldn't. And I had these lovely conversations for a couple of weeks, and at the age of 4, I just assumed that whatever I could do, anybody else could do too. So I asked my sister who she spoke to, and she went ballistic. And that was my first indication. You know, and I thought, you know, this is telling me how the rest of the world is going to react to this. And so I put a lid on my curiosity and ended the conversations. And I did not honor the gift anymore until I was in Los Angeles and almost homeless. And I remember thinking that I couldn't get much lower than I already was. So what did I have to lose from trying to honor the gift? And so I was just sitting in my one-room roach-infested apartment one day, and I said, you know, I want to honor this gift, but and I will honor this gift, and I will share what I hear with others, but I sure need a job to support me while I do so. And 3 weeks later, I had the job with Castle Rock Entertainment. On the second day, they were in business. And I stayed and worked for the same man for the next 20 years and was able to retire and write full time. And it was like a miracle. It was as if the universe said, okay, if you're ready, we're ready, and here we go. And so,
that's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I really do believe that if we have a reason to be here and we don't honor it, the soul says, oh, okay, you're not ready. Well, we're out of here and we'll try back. We'll come back again and try again. So I don't think that I would be here if I had refused to honor the gift, but here I am.
So the woman that you were talking to at night, did she talk back to you?
Yes, and I had lovely conversations, and I don't remember them specifically, but I remember they always made a lot of common sense to me, and they were answering my questions at that time in my life and were very comforting and reassuring. But the thing is that at the age of 4, when your sister reacts that way to something you're doing, it seems like that's more important. You know, your relationship with your sister is more important than looking like a weirdo. And even in the middle of my life, when I decided to honor this gift again, I still had reservations because this kind of gift did not have the acceptance then that it does today. And so I still didn't share what I was doing for a long time. I just finally came to the point where I was really tired of hiding what I did in my free time and resentful of the fact that I couldn't be open about what I did and who I was. And so I just decided that I would, you know, be my true self and let the chips fall where they may. And so I think that's when my life really changed, because I just sort of came out of the closet and said, this is who I am, and I can't change it. I'm who I am.
So do you think the resistance of accepting who you are led you down that path that was not so positive for yourself?
No, what led me down the positive, the unpositive or the negative path was that I grew up blaming everyone else for all my problems and instead of taking responsibility for myself. And what it really did was just attract a lot of blamers into my life because like energy attracts like energy. And it was just a repeating pattern that I had really that was from, I think of patterns as being habits that you get into and can't stop. And so when I started to write and accept this gift and was hearing all these messages, my life certainly gradually turned around from hearing opposing ideas about taking responsibility for the choices. I mean, all the choices that I had made that got me almost homeless, I had made those choices. Although I was blaming other people for them, I had made those choices. And so it was about becoming accountable for what I had decided and what I had chosen. And from there, you see, if I hadn't, and while I kept telling myself it was other people's problems, I felt helpless to change my life. As soon as I said, I'm responsible for the choices I made, it empowered me to make different choices.
You know, that accountability piece is so important, isn't it? Finding your own accountability, taking responsibility for the choices you make and the decisions that you make and what you do in your life is so important. When you go through life blaming and pointing fingers at other people and saying it's their fault or why I ended up the way I am or where I am, it just disempowers you and it really gives you such a distorted view of the world.
Yeah, it convinces you that you're a victim, and that's what's so disempowering. That you know you can't change your life because other people aren't changing theirs. You're waiting for other people to change so that you can change your life. Well, you know, people change when they're good and ready to change, and not a moment sooner. And they change for their sake; they don't change for your sake.
Yeah. So why do you think we get discomforted? Why do you think we're uncomfortable sometimes?
Well, I think it's also a focus. I think that we get uncomfortable about things we think are wrong. Something's going wrong. Things aren't the way they should be. I don't have what I need. All that coming from a lack mentality. And I think that the only way you find comfort out of discomfort is by looking for the comfort in the discomfort, looking for the growth, looking for some way of understanding what you've learned from going through the discomfort. Because as soon as you put yourself in the position of seeing why the discomfort is around or the wisdom of the discomfort being there to teach you something else, the discomfort goes away because you've found what there is to appreciate about it, and then you've changed your focus completely.
So is that the reason you wrote the Love Human book?
Well, yes, and I love humans really about a lot of questions I had all my life. All my books are. I think when I'm writing my book, it's answering the questions I have in the moment. And so it's really a book that I write for me, and because we're all one, it answers a lot of questions for everyone else. I think we all, you know, the questions that are asked in the book are really questions that are fairly universal that we have. As soon as we're old enough to start figuring out or asking ourselves what life in here is all about. And so it was written because I had wanted answers to questions that I had, and I realized fairly quickly that the questions were fairly universal.
So what's the important idea in Love Human?
I think it reminds us that we live in a world of constant changes in the picture we see, and we can't always control what happens in the picture to us, but we can control how we deal with it and how we feel about it. And I really think that's one of the more important messages in Love Human, and that we're more powerful than we think we are. We control our attitudes and opinions. I mean, even if we think we don't, we do control our attitudes and opinions, and whatever ones we have, we attract back to us. So that's why when I was, like the first half of my life, my attitude was fairly negative and fairly cynical. And so that's what I was attracting back into my life, people who had the same attitude. and not until I, you know, or people who were blaming. And an amazing thing was that as soon as I did take responsibility for the choices I had made, then I started attracting people into my life who were also taking responsibility for their choices. And so it really changed my relationships completely in a better way.
And, you know, that makes so much sense, because that cynicism is such a double-edged sword, isn't it?
Yes.
On one hand, you can always kind of justify it by saying, oh, I speak the truth, so I'm realistic and that sort of thing. But on the other side, you're kind of denying the hope in life and the positive things that life has to bring. So I see where that would trip you up.
Yes, well, you reinforce whatever you put out there. You know, if you put out one of the most important ideas I've ever heard in the work that I'm doing is that the universe interprets everything that you do as love. Anything you're putting out there, any expression you're putting out there, the universe thinks it's love, because the universe thinks everything is love. Therefore, if I am disrespectful or negative towards another person, the universe says, oh, Betsy thinks negativity and disrespect are love, so let's give her lots more of that back. So, you know, the universe always wants to give us what we love. And so we have to make sure that our interpretation of love is what we want the universe to send back to us.
That's really interesting. The universe wants to give us. Say that again, Betsy.
The universe wants to give us everything we tell it we love.
I have never heard anybody say that before. That is really insightful. Really
yeah.
insightful. Because when you think about it, that makes so much sense. You know, when,
yeah,
when go ahead.
The universe has no judgment on good, bad, wrong, or right. I mean, it doesn't function that way. It doesn't have an ear to hear what you're saying. You know, it only has its essence in which it can feel your essence and respond.
So, in other words, we go through life basically, like a lot of people say, teaching people how to treat us.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's
you know, everything we express out there, if we're gossiping about other people, then the universe interprets that as our love and sends us lots of people who gossip.
Really?
And, you know, it's very simple. It's a really simple idea.
It is. It's a very simple idea, but it can be very complex. Because, you know, as
because
you go
of rationalization.
Life, yeah. Because
rationalization, we rationalize what we do. In other words, I would say to myself, well, why shouldn't I be mean to them? They've been mean to me. But the universe doesn't recognize rationalization. It recognizes the emotion you give and returns that emotion to you.
Wow. That's really great. You know, if you're listening today to what Betsy has to say, definitely give us a call. I would love to hear from you. The guest call-in number or the listener call-in number is 646-716-9397. Again, that's 646-716-9397. Just press 1 to get into the show. Okay, so Betsy, let's start discussing some of the chapters, okay? In
okay.
Love Human. All right. So the chapter 1 is Who Am I? What
yes.
is that chapter? What is that chapter all about?
It's about how we are all perfect love now and forever, even if we forget we are. It's about why we come here, what we want to know about ourselves. It's about wanting to know ourselves here with the same clarity that we know ourselves when we're not here, or whether it's knowing ourselves in form with the same clarity that we know ourselves out of form. And the idea that the only difference between being in form and out of form is form. So, I mean, I believe that when we're out of form, we're doing exactly the same thing we're doing in form. It's just that we don't do it with a body. But if we're interested in growing here, why wouldn't we be interested in growing when we're out of form? If we're interested in sharing our hearts here, why wouldn't we be interested in sharing our hearts when we're without a body and in form? I really think that the goal is to know ourselves in every game we play, and I don't think the book touches on the fact that there are games happening many other places other than planet Earth, and we choose to come to the experience that is best for our evolutionary progress. And so if it would be better for us to go to another universe where there's a different kind of a challenge for us, then that's where we would go, and we would take whatever body was appropriate for that experience. And so, I mean, I can't believe, I mean, this comes up later in the book too, but I can't believe that with the curiosity we have in the world today, with where we are now, and all the multiple choices that we have to choose from in this lifetime, how we could possibly have only one place called planet Earth where we could go to learn what we needed to learn. It just doesn't make any sense to me. Our imagination is too big for that. We would have millions of places to go to that we could all choose between them, just like we can choose here between millions of things we want to do.
So where does our imagination come from? Where does your imagination come from? Let's start with you.
Well, I think my imagination comes from the possibility to think and to feel and when I talk about imagination in this book, it's about all the things that our imagination could have possibly created and what we went through in that process. And this chapter sort of takes us through the process of when we first came here, which I believe we came here knowing who we were completely, knowing we were the love of God when we first arrived on planet Earth, because how could we arrive as anything else if we had come from that place of wholeness with God to begin with, which is what all children come here with. They come here believing that they are, that everything is love, until someone tells them differently and they believe the lie. And so therefore the challenge for us from coming here from that place of perfect love is to remember that we are perfect love, and that our imagination has created all these stages of life that we have gone through since we first got here. And because we are free to think anything we want to think, at one time we started thinking of something other than love, which I guess you could call ego or negativity or whatever you want to call it. But we were free to choose, so we chose to experiment in another direction. And if we're free to choose, why wouldn't we choose? I mean, it's all about having that choice of how we want to live our lives. But because so many people chose negativity, the whole experience of whatever you want to call, like the Garden of Eden, changed. And it has been a slow progress of getting back to that place. I think this happened over eons and eons, but it is about what our imagination can create for us in the process of growth and the process of our emotional evolution. And so it went through the first era of the Garden of Eden, and then we went through the period of where we lost our ability to sense the feelings of other people. We lost our ability to communicate through thought, and so therefore we had to mutate into a mouse where we could communicate better. And then we went through the era of war, when we began to think that other people were responsible for our problems. And then we went through the era of realizing that perfect love kept our body healthy all the time, and if we didn't have that perfect love, then the body began to age, and then there was death. And then finally, when there was death, there had to be the mutation of eras so that we could propagate again. And so it's like we've been through this long, long history that of trying to remember who we are and coming back to that perfect place of love. And I believe it's an evolution that we're all going through, and that we'll all eventually get back to there, where however long it takes.
I want to take you back a little bit. You talked about, when we were talking about who am I, you talked about in form and out of form.
Yeah.
Can you explain that a little bit, what that means, in form and out of form?
Well, when we come here, the spirit jumps into the body as it is born, and mm-hmm. we are spirit in form. And when we die, the spirit leaves the body, and so then you are out of form. It doesn't mean you die. Mm-hmm. I mean, energy is... can't be created or destroyed. Energy just is. But we are free to do anything we want with our energy. Even while we're here, we're free to do what we want with our energy. And we're free to do what we want with it before we get here and after we leave.
So who we are on Earth when we're alive has a lot to do with, I guess, the legacy that we leave when we leave this Earth, when we leave our present form. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. I mean, I think you're still who you are. You're just who you are without a body.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when you leave here, you remember who you truly are, because your memory comes back of your entire history. And therefore, mm-hmm. you know you are really the love of God. And so if we forget something this lifetime, we just come back to try to remember it the next time around.
So
I mean, I can't imagine it would be about anything else. You know, I truly believe that before we come here, we're planning our journey with probably with the people we love the most, and I'm saying to the spirits that I'm really friendly with, this is one of the challenges I need when I go back again, and somebody jumps in and says, oh, you know, I'll be that person for you. I'll be the one who challenges you, and so then when we get, you know, like I had a terrible time with my mother, so my mother jumped in as the person who would challenge me, and I think the people who give us the biggest challenges are the ones who love us the most, because they're the ones who care if we succeed. And then I think when we leave here, when I leave here, I'll meet my mother again, and my mother's going to say to me, did it work? Did it work? And I'm going to say, yes, it really worked. It worked great. And so then we go on, and we choose the lifetimes and the challenges with the people who are willing to give us the challenges we need. And it goes on and on until we remember who we truly are. And I think when you remember who you truly are, it's about a feeling inside of you and the power of that, power of the energy you are. And then you can create whatever you want to create instantaneously.
So, Betsy, what place does God have in your philosophy? Because I hear you talking about biblical thoughts and ideas, and I'm just curious where God fits in for you.
Because I mentioned the Garden of Eden.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's just my way of identifying with that place that we came when we first came here. I'm not a Christian. I'm very inclusive of all religions. I think God is the presence of love within all of us, and I think we are all one in the whole of energy.
Mm-hmm.
That there is no, the only separation there is the separation that we see, because we're looking at the body and thinking that the body is what makes us different.
So when we talk about that out of form and that I guess next level of existence or different level of existence, you're not necessarily speaking of heaven.
Hell are created right here on earth. You create your own heaven or hell.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I don't think I don't think heaven and hell are a place. They are a feeling.
I see.
I've certainly created my own hell on earth. And I think most people have. I mean, you know, if we knew how to create heaven 24/7, we wouldn't even be here. We wouldn't be here learning the lessons we're learning. We're here because we're trying to remember that the heaven and hell begin within.
I mean, definitely, without a doubt, there are moments where I wonder if it could get any worse. And then I think and then I think about the hell of the Bible, and I think, well, that sounds worse, but it feels pretty bad. It feels pretty uncomfortable on earth sometimes. So
yes.
So let me ask you, you know, in saying that, how do you find more comfort?
Well, you know, as you're saying that, the first thing that came to me, and I always trust these instincts, is that the hell that we create for ourselves, a lot of it is about expectations of how things are supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then when things don't live up to our expectations, we are disappointed and, what's the purpose of it all? What's it all about? Why am I here if it's just to be unhappy? And I think that expectations do us all in, and I think that what we need to really to focus on, like I was thinking when you were so busy in your work and you get so feeling so harassed with being so busy that you're forgetting the moment is all you have. I mean, you're focused on what you have to do and all the things you're supposed to be doing and aren't getting done, instead of focusing on the moment and how about making right now comfortable and stop worrying about 2 months from now, a month from now, a week from now.
Yeah, and that's so true, because what happens is you forget those lessons that tell you that you're not supposed to be a human doing, you're supposed to be a human being, and you just sort of go on, you know, I do it all the time. I'm constantly working in project after project after project, and I wonder, you know, what is it that I'm trying to, I don't know.
There's nothing wrong mm-hmm. with working in project after project if you are enjoying the process of that you're in the moment. In other words, you can have 40 projects that you're working on. As long as the moment you're working on one of them, you're making that moment as wonderful as you can possibly make it.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah.
that's what you take with you into the next project. Whatever attitude you have about the present project is what you're going to be taking with you into the future, because the future is just the next moment.
Mm-hmm. So in answering that question, how do I find comfort? So part of it, I think, is what you're saying. It's not just doing the work, but it's also finding joy in the work.
Joy in the work, absolutely. I mean,
mm-hmm.
where else are you going to find comfort if you don't find it in what's uncomfortable? You already have things
mm-hmm.
around you in your life that are comfortable, so you're happy with that part. So it's the part that's uncomfortable where you want to bring the comfort. So you have to look at the discomfort in your life in an honest way and ask yourself, how can I, this thing feels uncomfortable to me, so what can I do to make it more comfortable? Well, usually the thing you have to bring to it is more love, because love is very comfortable. Or you can find the growth, whatever that, love represents to you in the moment. It can represent what you learned from having that person around, if it's about a person, or what did you've learned about trying a project that didn't work. Well, you learned what doesn't work, and so you're closer to what does work. It's always about taking the attitude that is comfortable and is progressive, that doesn't set you back into negative feelings.
And, the question that I'm wondering is, in Chapter 8 of your book, Love Human, how do I find more love?
You find it where you don't think it is. That's where you find it. Where you don't think it could possibly exist. In other words, ask yourself, where do I think love can't possibly exist for me in my life? And where does love not, where is there a situation in my life where I know there is no love and I don't think I can ever find any love there? And then you look for the love. And I mean, when you look for the love, you look for instance, from my own life, when I had to think of, when I think back on my mother, for instance, I'm sorry, mother, to use you for all these examples, but they're so meaningful to me that they reach out to other people because they touched me so deeply. So when I think of when I was trying to find, sometimes I get into these ruts where I remember all the pain of growing up with my mother, and I have to say to myself, what can I find that I remember good about this woman? And one of the things I found about that was that I could focus on instead of the negative aspect that would make me feel depressed was that the very fact that we were so different, that she had a different philosophy towards life, that she had different priorities than I had, that she had different things that she enjoyed than I did. The very fact that she was that way is what forced me to find a philosophy that worked for me, because I was so uncomfortable in her way of living and what she thought was important. It forced me to find what I needed in life. And perhaps if we had agreed on everything, I would have just sort of floated along and not really found what mm-hmm. I needed to find. So when I go into that bad place, I remember, but wait a minute, she's the one who was the challenge I needed to get me where I needed to go with this philosophy that I have found that has changed my life. And so that's what we need to do. When I think about ex-husbands, I think about the idea, well, how can I find something good about those situations? Well, I have these wonderful children. That's one good thing. Or they taught me something about the insecurity in me that I kept saying was their fault instead of it started with me. This is how we do it. We go through the process of what were they there with me? Why were they there with me, in the first place? Because they reflected a part of me. Because they were there to mirror me so that I could learn about myself through them.
And it sounds to me like you're talking about people in your life who are sort of fixed, like a mother.
Mm-hmm.
When you're 4 years old and your mother is in your life, there's not much that, it's not like being at a job that you can quit because you don't like your boss.
That's true.
It's a different scenario. So you're sort of.
But it's also true that if you don't deal with the boss you have, you'll have the same problem with the boss you get.
Say more about that. That's an interesting philosophy. I've heard that before.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't deal with what it is about the boss that is bothering you so much, or what it is that got you into that job with that person in the first place, you haven't learned from what the job's all about. You haven't learned why your soul has you in that job with that person. And therefore, the next job you go to, the soul will say, well, you can go to a new job, but the lesson perseveres, and, you know, it'll be the same challenge, looking different. They know the boss will look different, but the challenge will be the same. Because the soul loves us. The soul wants us to grow, and therefore, it isn't going to give up on us.
And once you, the soul wants you to learn the lesson is basically what you're saying. Yeah,
because that's why we're here. That's why the soul came into the body in the first place, because it wanted to learn these lessons. It wanted us to understand that we are a light shining out into the universe, and whatever light we shine is the light that comes back to us. And so, therefore, you know, it's the same idea we talked about before. The universe thinks everything is love, so whatever love we put out there or whatever action or expression we put out there, the universe returns to us so that we learn what we're putting out there. And so it's the same idea.
And in Chapter 10, you talk about judgments. I find the chapter title kind of interesting. Are judgments helpful?
Yeah.
It sounds like an oxymoron to me. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's the idea that nothing is in the world is good, bad, wrong, or right. It simply is.
There are no mistakes.
Yeah, we're not affected by the judgments of others unless their judgment has something to teach us about our own judgment.
Can you maybe give me an example of what you mean by that?
Well, if I have somebody, here's how powerful I think that our energy really is. I had an experience where I was working for a woman. This brings in the idea of where you're working too. I had a woman who I was working for, and I just could not understand why she had the job she had. I didn't see that I thought she was incompetent. I didn't think she knew how to do what she was hired to do. I mean, I had so many complaints about her, and I would go home every night, and I would fester and fester and fester. I never said anything to her about it, but I had been, you know, for a little while into these new ideas, and I was thinking to myself, wait a minute, now, you know, I've got to put my money where my mouth is and see what I can do about this relationship. So I went home and I started writing down anything good I could find out about, anything I could think good about this woman, anything I could focus on. And so I wrote one thing down, and then after I read one thing, I had a couple more things. And so I just started, instead of going home and festering about the things I didn't like about her or the incompetence I thought I saw around her, I started focusing on the things that I liked about her. And although I never said anything to her about anything in this process, I simply did my job. After about 2 weeks of me focusing on the things that I could see that were good about her, that the whole relationship shifted. She did not say one word to me about my attitude. I did not say a word to her about my attitude. It was all inner stuff that happened, that I changed my attitude towards her. She felt it, and she changed towards me.
Interesting.
And it was miraculous. And nothing was done on the outside, which is what's so important. It doesn't mean you have to, you know, when people say, I can't stand my job, I can't stand the people I'm with. Well, you know, that's not about the people you're working with. That's about you. You're not finding anything good about the people you're working with. You're just finding complete negativity. And when you think you're going to work to complete negativity every day, how can you not feel depressed? So you have to find the positive in the people you're with. You have to find what's good about them. You have to look for their good qualities, and you have to remember them and reinforce them. And then you begin to see that the people around you are, you know, how. And also, if they are bothering you, if there's somebody in the office who you just can't stand, ask what it is that she makes you feel. How does she make you feel? Well, she makes you feel like you're patronized, okay? So that's the clue. You ask yourself, okay, who am I patronizing that I feel that patronization from somebody else? Because it's always the emotion coming back that you have given to somebody else. I had that one too. I had a boss who I felt was very patronizing. And so I had to ask myself, you know, who am I patronizing that I have this person in my life that's making me feel this way? And I realized that when I first had these ideas that were coming to me, I felt like they were the ideas that everybody should have. You know, these were the ideas that turned your life around, so everybody should have these ideas. And so I was telling a really good friend of mine, you know, what she should do, what decision she should make in her life, as if I knew. And I realized I was being very patronizing, and I said, So there it is. So that's why I have this mirror of this person at work, because I'm patronizing my friend who I really love. And so I went to her and I said to her, you know, I haven't the faintest idea what you should be doing with your life. I just trust that you'll work it out and your soul will know what you're supposed to do. And then when I went back to work, the person who was patronizing, that person didn't stop their behavior, but it didn't bother me anymore. It was like it came toward me, like it was like I have an aura around me that represents all the ideas I'm putting out into the world, and if an idea comes back that isn't compatible with my aura, it just bounces off. You notice it, you see it, but it doesn't impact your heart.
So in that process, was there anything that you did besides the writing down? What other methods did you use? Did you pray? Did you meditate? Did you, I don't know, anything?
I do meditate, but I don't think this process is necessarily about meditation unless meditation brings an idea to you about what it is that mirror is reflecting in you. I think it's really more simple than that. I think it's just it's about honesty. It's about me being honest enough to say to myself, I am patronizing my friend. And it's usually the very first thought that comes to you, because the very first thought is your soul responding, and you have to trust that very first thought, because if you don't, then ego gets in and says, oh, you're justified for having that feeling. You know, don't worry about it. You're justified for having it. You have to trust the very first thing that comes to you. So it's really about remembering that, again, there isn't anything bad, good, wrong, or right about what people are living. It's just what you're asking to receive.
That whole idea of mirrors is very provocative, actually, the idea that people in your life mirror who you are, and and that sometimes it's hard to see who you are.
It is hard
to
see, because the hardest part, it's the hardest thing I think we come here to do, to be honest. And I talk about this with people who are, you know, my friends, you know, who are on the same path. We talk about it all the time, that the hardest thing to do is to see it. And a very good friend of mine, I was just talking to her the other day, and she said that she was talking about what her husband did and how hard it was for him to see himself. And I said, and you know, it won't help if you tell him, because she wanted him to be more honest about his own behavior. And I said, the only thing you can do for him is to be honest about your own behavior and to show him it's okay to be honest. Because people don't change from what you say to them. They just don't. They take offense. And maybe they have a right to, because who are you to boss them around and tell them what they should be seeing or shouldn't be seeing? But if you live with your talk, if you want someone to be more introspective about who they really are, then be more introspective about who you really are, because that's how other people learn from you.
So lead by example is basically
exactly
what you're saying.
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah.
Now, we were talking a little bit a moment ago about prayer, and I'm wondering, does prayer, meditation, do those things have power?
I think it's all depending on the nature of the prayer. The book talks about this idea, and it says that there's some confusion about the nature of answered prayers, because, for instance, if I pray for others to change their minds, or for others to change their behavior, or for others to alter their loyalties, I don't think God has any comment to make on that. I think if I pray for others to be more loving, more considerate, or more honest, I don't think God has a comment on that. And I don't think God has a comment, because God knows that change begins within. So for a prayer to be effective, it's about helping me to become more loving, loyal, and considerate. And then I think God rushes in with all the opportunities to give me the chance to make that happen. Because we are creators. We are the creators of our lives. It all begins with us. It isn't about praying for others to be different. Why should they be different for you? They have their own life to live. You know, I just don't think that I don't care if you call this God, if you call God the universe, or you call it whatever you name, it's just a name that we have in our vocabulary. It's an all-powerful energy that's in all of us. And so if all of us have this all-powerful energy within us, why would we be more knowledgeable about what somebody else should be going through? We only have knowledge about our own life. We only know. We don't know this is where the chapter on judgment comes in too, Renee, because we judge people, other people's lives all the time. We're human. We do it. Even if we try not to do it, we do it. But the truth is, we don't have the foggiest idea why other people are here, what their challenges really are, why they decided to come, what they hope to accomplish while they're here. We don't have that information. So to make a judgment about their lives is meaningless. It has mm-hmm. no sense behind it. It just has mm-hmm. no, you know, it isn't helpful to anybody. The person you're judging probably doesn't even know you're doing it. It doesn't hurt them. It just hurts you for having all that judgment inside of you.
And then in reality, what happens is when you're judging someone, it's kind of like that whole mirror thing. You're judging yourself, right?
You're judging yourself, and you're attracting people into your life who feel free to judge you.
Interesting.
Because you have an aura that says judgment is fine, and so you attract all the people who think, okay, it's fine to judge you.
You know, it's so interesting how the mirror works, and how you're talking about the whole idea of really what you create for your life is so valuable and so important, and what you put out there is really what you're getting back.
And it's a very
simple, very, you know, non-complex way of thinking.
Yeah.
But it's so valuable and so important.
It doesn't make sense to me that we would come here willingly to a place where only a person with an IQ over 200 could grasp what life was all about. That just wouldn't make – who would come here if that was true? Nobody would come here if that were true. So it has to be simple. It has to be simple enough that everyone can understand regardless of their education, their background, their IQ, everything. It has to be simple enough everyone can understand, and everyone can understand that whatever you put out comes back.
Now, obviously, Betsy, this has been a journey for you, because you talk about a time in your life when it wasn't as positive, and to get to this place had to be challenging, and it obviously took a little bit of time. I'm wondering, what do you do when you're unsure about how to find comfort, when you're in that apartment that's infested with roaches, and, you know, it's just not a positive place to be? What do you do?
I think you have to ask yourself, well, let me see, what did I do? I just enjoyed, you know what I thought to myself? I one of the thoughts that came to me that was very comforting was, I'm still the same person I was, even though I have nothing in the world of illusion. And that was amazingly enlightening to me.
And it's comforting.
Yes, and it was part of the, I'm sure it was part of my journey that I had to see that I was still me, whoever I was in that moment when I had nothing and was almost and could have been homeless the next day except for a phone call I made to somebody and who helped me out. I would have been out in my car, living in my car. But I was still who I was. You know, and it was kind of an amazing experience in a way. And, of course, it was made all the more amazing by the fact that I decided I would be my authentic self and I would honor who that self was, but I needed support while I did it because I couldn't do it without having some support. And then, of course, the universe rushed in with all the support I needed because I was being who I was. I was willing to go out into the world as who I was. And let the chips fall where they may. And I think that spirit is just waiting for us to say, okay, this is who I am, and this is who I want to be, and this is who I came to be, and then everything falls into place. But it's still about enjoying every moment. I mean, I certainly have times now where I have to stop and say, wait a minute, I only have this moment. I only have this moment. No guarantee the next moment's going to be here for me. I only have this moment. No guarantee tomorrow's going to come. I could have a heart attack and die. Anything can happen. You can get run over by a car. I only have this moment. I have to make sure this moment has what I want it to have in it.
You know, it's interesting that you say that because lately, since I've been juggling so many projects, I've been having a lot of nighttime dreams. And I know one of your chapters, chapter 15, is about why do nighttime dreams exist. And I've been having a lot of, not necessarily nightmares, but I don't know if you've ever had the dream where you feel like you're dying. Do you ever have that dream? I guess not.
No.
Maybe I'm the only one.
Yeah.
And,
no, you're not the only one, but that's for what's happening for you right now. That's all.
Yeah. And I wake up, kind of suddenly and, kind of shake myself out of my sleep. And I wonder, why those kinds of things happen. I'm trying to dissect it, trying to figure it out, and trying to figure out why it happens is a mystery. But what do you think?
Okay, so what jumps to my mind after you say that is the soul is reminding you, are you living, are you having a good life right now? I mean, are you enjoying that you're alive in the human game right now? Or are you not?
And I am. I mean, I'm definitely enjoying that, enjoying life. But I guess reminding myself that I'm enjoying life is probably something that I need to do on a regular basis. Yeah.
Consciously, showing the universe that you really appreciate your life. Showing, not just thinking it, but showing it in some way. Putting it out there into the universe in some way. I'm a person who really loves my life.
Hey, I like that. I like the way that sounds, Betsy.
Yeah.
And I think what you were saying about appreciating the moments, because what happens a lot, I think, is that we do get caught up sometimes in the negativity. We get caught up in the things that are going wrong, trying to figure them out, trying to make them better. And that takes up a lot of time, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, just say I'm going to love that part of my life until I get back to it. I'm going to love that part of my life until I get back to it. And also, I might something that helps me, this is like the nitty-gritty of life when I have a lot of things on my mind that I have to do. I write them all down. I write them all down so that I have it someplace and I can get it out of my head in the moment. I have it written down so I can forget about it. Then when I accomplish one of those things, I go and I scrape it off the list. And then I scrape the next thing off the list. It's kind of an organization thing that works for me. I'm just putting it out there for you in case it might help. Because what happens if you don't write it down is you're afraid you'll forget something you're supposed to be doing, or you get caught up in one project and think you won't get to the next one, or you're afraid you might forget something you're supposed to do. So if you put it all down, you can forget about remembering it. You've got your reminder.
That's a really good idea, and definitely a good organizational tool.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
Now, I wonder too, Betsy, we talk a lot on this show and on my TV show about finding purpose. How important is it to find your purpose?
Well, I this is a hard one to really nail down, except that I think that when we remember that we're here to enjoy all the reunions that we're having. I mean, I think that we knew everybody before we got here, and we're just having all these wonderful reunions with people that we already know, to enjoy them, to enjoy somehow to put the, to be grateful for the challenges, the opportunities and the accomplishments, and to really, I think if you're loving your life, you found your purpose. I mean, I have people ask me that all the time, and I do feel that I found my purpose when I finally honored the gift. So if you're out there and you have a gift that you haven't honored, even though it seems other people might think it's strange or weird or whatever, honor it anyway, because it's one of the reasons you're here, and when you honor it, you'll feel more on purpose. And if you don't have anything specific that you want to accomplish or that you feel that you're hiding from other people, then just remember your purpose is to love each day, because that's, each day is a gift, and you can treat that day any way you want to treat it, but you're going to feel a lot happier and on purpose if you love it and find the good things about that day.
I think about how many times that question is asked and how many times people respond with, I'm not sure. And I think you just came up with the ultimate right answer, quote unquote, right answer. The purpose of life is to enjoy each moment and to really be able to honor the gifts that you have. And to really tap into those gifts and know what they are is sometimes it's difficult to cultivate. But if you can just kind of embrace life, it makes all the difference, right?
It does. It does. If you're doing something that you enjoy doing, I mean, it doesn't matter what kind of label the world has put upon it. It doesn't matter what your friends are going to think about it or your parents are going to think about it. It only matters that you're honoring it and you're happy doing it. That's all. That's the bottom line. This is the challenge I think we're here for. You know, we have these people who don't agree with us or, you know, make the decisions that please you. Nobody else has to live your life but you. I mean, I made decisions to please other people, and believe me, they did not please me in the long run. And they didn't please the people who pushed me to make them either, because I wasn't happy with them, and therefore they weren't happy. So nobody wins unless if you don't listen to yourself and make the decisions that please you. Nobody wins.
Good stuff, Betsy Otter Thompson. Thank you so much for your time today and for just being on the show and offering all your insight and your wisdom and your philosophies about life and what it really means to love human and to find comfort in the discomfort.
Thank you so much for having me, Renee. I've enjoyed every single minute talking to you.
And I've enjoyed every single minute talking to you as well. You have a fantastic rest of your day, and I'm sure we'll be in touch again soon.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that was Betsy Otter Thompson, everyone. Thank you so much, Betsy, for your time today and just for sharing all of these incredible insights about accountability and just being able to show up in the world and create a life that's honorable, because basically what happens is the people that you attract, they mirror you. And if you're finding that you are uncomfortable in your life, it's probably because there's something within you that needs to be worked through, that needs to be altered, that needs to be examined. And just like Betsy's example of how she worked with a woman and she went home every day and wrote down something positive about a woman that she really did not respect, I so identify with that, and I so understand what it's like to be able to be in a situation where you are uncomfortable at work. And it's not always easy to find positive things about people. But what you want to be able to do is free yourself so that you can be happier, you can be healthier, and so that you can be whole. As a reminder before we wrap up, we only have a little bit of time in the show. Mark My Words is coming up tomorrow with Certified Life and Business Coach Mark Shaw. On Monday the 16th, Save Your Sanity, Making Self-Care Work for You. And on Wednesday the 25th, Think Tank is going to be on, How to Recognize and Navigate Those Toxic Relationships. So we have a lot of really good stuff here at Life Coach Radio Network. And I'm just so happy to be a part of this incredible team of people. The one thing that I wanted to let you know about is that one of our Life Coach Radio Network hosts, Trina Ramsey, was on my television show a couple weeks ago. The episode aired about a week or so ago, and she did a phenomenal job, just a phenomenal job talking about gaining a career and what it means to show up in the world in a positive way. So I want to thank Trina so much for being on the show and for just supporting me. She came all the way from Maryland and stayed over, and we drove to the studio in the morning, and it was just a great, 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 great day hanging out with her. I also want to thank Dana Lightman for her contribution to the show. She did a fabulous job. Embrace Life with Renee airs every Sunday at 7 p.m. in the Philadelphia market. Brene Brown-Holman was a guest. She is a female bodybuilder and weightlifter. And then we also had Dr. Kristen Herbst from Lourdes Health System. I want to thank Lourdes Health System for their sponsorship of Embrace Life with Renee and all the support that they've offered me over the past couple of months in preparation for the show. And I just want to thank you, my listening audience, for being here and giving me an opportunity to have this amazing, incredible platform. Again, thank you to Bessie Otter Thompson for her book, Love Human, and for being on the show today. And I'm going to go and actually clean my apartment today because I've been running around like a chicken, and I haven't really had time to enjoy my home. So I'm going to take some of those life lessons that Betsy offered today and kind of internalize them and enjoy the next 48 hours and the rest of my life in a really incredible, positive way. Thank you again, and have a fantastic day, and I'll see you in a couple weeks. And in a couple weeks, I'm going to have one of my dearest friends, Tina Bristow, is going to be on the show, and she's going to be talking about health and wellness, and we're going to call that Tone and Chew, because she does this amazing segment on YouTube on how to get yourself all toned up. She is a powerhouse, a delight, just a healthy, beautiful individual, both inside and out. And I can't wait to have her on the show. Have a great day. Love you.